Chignon. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Living Astrology with Janet Hickox. Grab your cup of coffee or your tea, sit back, and let's chat about what is going on in the stars above us today. July 2nd, hard to believe we're already in July. My, how the time flies, right? So today is a fairly quiet day astrologically, and that gives us some time to share of a couple of different things today and that we haven't been able to do yet. Last week sometime, I don't remember what day it was now, I was asked to share more about the polarities in your astrology chart. Polarities being the axes of the houses from the first to the seventh, second to the eighth, third to the ninth, fourth to the 10th, 11th and the fifth, and the sixth to the 12th. And those six axes comprise similar energies in the astrology chart. Usually the lower numbers, one through six, meaning more personal and more to the individual, and the horizon, above the horizon, the sixth, seventh through the 12th houses, more of the community or social aspect. And yet they are similar to one another in the energies that they bring up. So I think it was Ursula who had requested that we talk about that. So we're going to be looking at that as well. After a 1 minute long void of course moon last night, the moon has moved out of the sign of Scorpio into the sign of Sagittarius. Can you feel more lightness now in the air, more optimism, less emotional depth? Not that there's anything wrong with emotional depth, mind you, but sometimes the moon moving through Scorpio can be bringing up things for us, and it can be some uncomfortable stuff that we are working with, and it's deep, it's intense, it's about passion. And now we move into the sign of Sagittarius with the moon, which changes up the meaning of the energy of the day. Now, we don't have any other new major aspects of planets. Remember in the overview of the week back on Monday, we talked about Thursday and Friday being days to breathe. So today we are at Thursday. It is a day to breathe, to catch up, maybe to sort of recharge your battery, if you will, because there isn't anything else that's really pressuring us to take action in any different way. And the moon, we're used to every day, it's making its transits through the chart, through the signs. It spends 2 to 3 days a month in each of the signs. So it's not that it's not affecting us. It's just that it's not as effective as, say, a Jupiter-Pluto conjunction or things like that. I'm going to trip over here to YouTube real quickly to say hello to people. Good morning, Amy and Debbie Tibbetts-Tumiel. Good morning, Camilla and Deborah Johnson. And Debbie says, I don't know why they screen those comments. Debbie Tibbetts-Tumiel reminds everybody to hit the like button. Thank you so much, Debbie. I love that. Hit the like button. And also, if you will, if you haven't done it yet, go look down below here and hit the subscribe button. Help me get this channel up and out there for people. Share the channel with your friends. All of that is so appreciated by me here on my end. And Debbie, I appreciate you, and Amy, who often brings it up, and J-Lo, and Terry, all of you who remind everybody at various points in the morning to please like the video. I can't tell you what that means to me. Kimberly Eberhard, good morning. Allison, good morning. It's good to see you. She says, finally made it. And Debbie says, I'm looking sparkly today. Yeah, this should look familiar to you. Mimi, good morning. Kamal, good morning to you. Everybody is here, or at least starting to check in, so we can play around for a little bit. Tell me, how are you guys doing? I see Tati, and then I also see, who was that? That was, I think, Deborah. Okay, Deborah Johnson. I think I saw you already. So tell me how everybody's doing. How have you managed the week so far? Are you feeling positive and optimistic? Are you feeling crazed and in conflict? Tell me how you're doing. You can put those comments here in the chat stream, and I will come back and take a look at those in a little bit. I want to know how, in general, everybody's doing out there. I know how I'm doing. And sometimes, you know, I feel like I'm actually, you know, just one of you all. So things that are going on for me are often going on for you. And for instance, last night was a night I could not sleep. I could not get to sleep. Yet I was tired, and I had moved enough during the day yesterday to get some things done. But as I went to bed, I started noticing that my heart was beating hard, or it felt like it. I kept looking at my Fitbit and it's telling me your heart's beating 70 beats a minute. Well, that's not that fast. So why was I feeling like my heart was beating out of my chest? And then my stomach started getting involved, and I went, I'm tapping into something else that's not necessarily me. My body is just being the receiver of some of that energy. And of course, I never really quite know for sure where that's coming from. And I, you know, who knows, right? There's so many things. And then I finally, about 1 o'clock, I think the last time I looked at my watch, it was 12:47. So somewhere after that, I fell asleep. And I woke up right at 6 o'clock this morning, like ready for my day. So who knows what was going on out there in the atmosphere last night. But I feel like sometimes, you know, we tap in. And the moon in Sagittarius, you know, is such a change in energy from the moon in Scorpio, where Scorpio was water, maybe a little more depth, a lot slower energy. And the moon in Sagittarius ramps up that energy. It's fire. And it gives more energy to the night, and that shift happening late enough in the day, maybe it's just the way it affected me personally. I don't know. Allison says, my mind wants to go, 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 but my body doesn't. Sleeping has been rough too. Mimi says, overall doing fine, a bit weary today. Deborah Johnson, feeling tired but inspired. That's a good thing, right? Tired but inspired. Maybe sometimes what happens when we're tired is our mind can maybe slow down somewhat and allow the more creative energy to become expressed. That would be kind of fun. Debbie TT, I was supposed to have an endoscopy and colonoscopy today. Oh, yay, fun. But I couldn't keep the prep down and it got canceled and I was awake at 2:30, feeling better today. Oh my goodness, sweetheart, I'm so sorry. Those are not fun. I know they're absolutely important in the grand scheme of things. But that stuff that you have to drink is nasty. Amy Energy, feeling great, but also that it's making me feel more restless at home. I pulled the Sagittarius card this morning. Didn't even think about the moon. It makes a lot of sense now, right? Destiny Clark, good morning to everybody. So it sounds like, you know, you guys are sort of modeling to me that same sort of up and down, various expressions of this energy that's moving through as we prepare for the full moon lunar eclipse on Saturday, Sunday, and having the moon already move into Sagittarius. It's one of the polarities that I want to talk to you all about today, as in the opposite sign is Gemini, and we have Venus in Gemini. Remember, she's sort of dropped off our radar this week as she's no longer in retrograde, but she is still moving through the same span of degrees that she was during the retrograde. She's moving forward faster now, a little bit faster, and yet she's still in the sign of Gemini, which made me go, the moon is in Sagittarius. What a perfect time for us to talk about the polarities in our energy. And just looking at how everybody's feeling today also shows us those polarities, where possibly the moon in Sagittarius is playing in one house for someone, making it different in its expression than it is for someone else, etc. So we're going to do that. We're going to talk a bit today also about, I'm going to read you the story, the wisdom story of the Gate 39 provocation. And maybe that's what it is too. Maybe we're all being provoked in different ways to move more toward the spiritual, to more toward what is the correct expression of who we are on the planet. And that's appropriate as well, because the moon in Sagittarius is about idealism. It is about truth seeking. It is about being optimistic. And also, in no small measure, remember the symbol for Sagittarius, which was a centaur, right? A centaur meaning half horse, half man, half human. And he's carrying a bow and arrow with that arrow pointed at the heart of the galaxy, or the heart of the solar system, i.e. the galactic center, and i.e. that meaning where truth emits from, right? Where the process of finding the truth, our quest for knowledge, emits from that very powerful spot in the sky, in where we can't even connect to it other than through meditation, because there's no actual physical expression of it. So it is an energetic pulse, let's say, that we are tuned into. And today that is taking us into the mental axis of our charts, over across the third and the ninth houses of the natural zodiac. You might have it across different houses, but whatever houses that you have Gemini and Sagittarius across is where you apply mental principles, where you have a lot of mental energy stored and expressed. So we're going to take a look at the actual astrology chart for the day anyway. We'll pretend it's a person, and we'll take a look and see what that is doing in a chart. Sagittarius overall rules that quest, that hero's journey in some way, the hero's quest for truth, right? It's T, capital T, truth. The bigger truths, right? Not just what we perceive as a truth about who's lying or who's telling the truth. It's not that. It's much bigger. It envelops the bigger cosmic truths. So that maybe is the better way to look at it. And in Sagittarius, then we also have ideas of religions and spiritual seeking. So the hero's quest isn't just the journey to go out and find your life path or your purpose. It's also to find the center of your spirit. So that is what the moon brings us in Sagittarius. Now, also, Sagittarius is a sign known for its connection to the natural world. So the connection, let's say, to the great outdoors. When I look at things like REI or people that love the outdoors, those Subaru commercials and so forth, I often think about those people that own Subaru, let's say, or the founders of these movements and REI, what have you. How prominent is Sagittarius playing in their chart? Because it is Sagittarius that loves that great outdoors, this idea of exploring, being an adventurer. Also, part of the natural world being our ability to tune in to intuition and to instinct. So it is also a part of the journey of the moon through Sagittarius, is bringing us to that very powerful intuition. And don't forget, right now, Neptune is also retrograde. And when Neptune is retrograde, we're more open to tuning in, to tapping in to the information coming to us from source or from the cosmos or from, you know, the unseen realm. So there is also that connection going on for us, even though at this point, you know, Neptune is in Pisces, that's kind of a square to Sagittarius energy. So we may be challenged at this point for these next few days to really tune into our inner voice, to hear, you know, something deeper from within. Freedom is also one of the key words for Sagittarius, and in that is adventure and the ability to be spontaneous and exploring and broadening your horizons, right? Getting out of the groove that you're in and expanding that groove to encompass a broader horizon, a bigger perspective, to seeing things from a different way, in a different way, dealing with different cultures or different religions or different people, expanding the tapestry, if you will, to include everyone. It's very inclusive energy, and it becomes more inclusive as it becomes more exploring and more extroverted in its expression. Now, here's an interesting tidbit too, and I found this, the first news story I saw of the day is Jeffrey Epstein's partner. Her name was Ghislaine Maxwell, I think it is, and she was implicated by every teen who's now a woman, that was engaged sexually with Jeffrey Epstein. She was the person that brought them together or facilitated those kinds of, allegedly facilitated those experiences. And they found her in New Hampshire, and have arrested her. Now, I don't know why it is that they hadn't arrested her up until now. Maybe they hadn't found her. I don't know. But now she's arrested, interestingly, this morning at 8:30 New Hampshire time. So that was definitely by the time the moon was in Sagittarius, and Sagittarius rules the law. And attorneys, lawsuits, court proceedings, everything that we think of to do with ethics and morality all come through Sagittarius. Also, ethics and morals kind of together, they're a little different in their expression. I would say ethics is a personal code by which we move through life. Morals seem to be more imposed upon us by the outer world, as in a religion that says you can't have an abortion or you can't have sex before marriage or that kind of thing. That's a more moralistic view. Ethics is more about your personal integrity. So we have all of that bundled up today. And what we're seeing is living astrology out there in the world with a very prominent arrest of someone who has been evading the law for a while. Also, though, Sagittarius rules optimism. And so there is this tendency in that sign to have faith. Sometimes it's blind faith, and it might be blind faith in a person, as a cult leader might demand faith from his followers. And that gets caught up today a little bit with our Pleiadian Earth energy of devoting, which brings up issues around loyalty and then in the shadow, inappropriate loyalty. So there's this sort of dovetail that's going on, a coherent connection between the Pleiadian Earth energy, which represents our spiraling of consciousness, and the moon in the astrological chart, also bringing up our concept of faith. And having faith is not a bad thing. That is not what I'm saying. But what do you have faith in, right? Faith in yourself, faith in God, faith in family. What is it, right? That is what comes up. And good luck is also a part of the expression with Sagittarius moon, because it's ruled by the planet Jupiter, and Jupiter tends to magnify and bring fortunate events and things like that. Generosity is also a part of it, a generous heart, a generous spirit. As far as polarity to Gemini is concerned, remember I just said that was a mental axis, and we're going to get into that deeper here in a minute. But the sign of Sagittarius rules higher education, the higher mind. So mentors or college and university education, our philosophy, right? So when we are tapped into religions or to a spiritual path of some sort, the higher aspect here in Sagittarius brings us to the overall philosophy that we have. As well, I think Sagittarius is also very impactful and important in our ability to find solutions to problems, maybe even new solutions, untried solutions, or being open to using the mind in new ways, right? Mental calisthenics, perhaps. We do have some things to watch out for, though, as we do with every sign. We have the positive expression as well as the potential for the negative expression. Hopefully we come somewhere in the middle, but sometimes, right, we see this outer world that's mirroring some of the more negative, or we somehow get drawn into that. And in Sagittarius, we have to be careful that our spontaneous nature that gets triggered doesn't take us or lead us down the road of taking shortcuts, where we jump ahead instead of sort of like being a manifesting generator, only most of you are not manifesting generators. And so taking shortcuts is not in your DNA. And sometimes we find that we jump ahead and then we have to go backwards. So watch out for that. Watch out for being self-righteous, right? Believing so much in your own beliefs, having so much faith that you're right and the other person is wrong, that you become self-righteous in the way that you're approaching people, that you're approaching the world in general. Watch out for making assumptions. Never assume. It makes an ass out of you and me. Never assume. Also, communication is also a part of that Gemini-Sagittarius axis. The more negative expression of communication is blunt talk. And remember, our south node is sitting at the gate 10 in our human design, where sometimes that can connect to the sword, using words as swords or as verbal sparring with someone. So we want to be careful about our words today, that our words are kind and gentle and compassionate. If you can't be kind and gentle, compassionate in what you say, then don't say it at all, right? What did mom used to say? If you can't say something nice, don't say something at all. Don't say anything at all. Great wisdom for the day, for the next couple of days. Extravagance is also something we watch out for during the transit of Sagittarius by the moon. Now, the body, we always take a look at the body. The part of the body that Sagittarius rules are the hips, right? So get those hips moving. The liver, also a part of that. Sciatica, which I thought that was interesting. I would have almost put that with Leo energy. But sciatica, meaning sort of that a pinched nerve type of feeling. And it also rules the thighs and the upper legs. So maybe, you know, do some squats today, but be careful, don't overdo it, right? Let's get some, you know, good, strong muscles moving here. Jupiter is the planet of mercy and expansion. I like that, Destiny. I hadn't heard that before, mercy. Allison says, I tell my daughter that too. I'm a Sagittarius sun. There you go. J-Lo says, I always say, tell me the truth. We will work through it. But a lie loses trust. Yeah, that's perfect. Let's see. Ha, my north node is in Sagittarius. Now I see why I tell the kids that I despise a lie. And Allison says, my hips have been killing me. So you could look to where Sagittarius is in your chart, Allison, and J-Lo, any of you. The house that it's in is where those things are playing out. So the way I use this is when there's a part of my body that's out of sorts, behaving badly, or maybe one that's feeling really good, then I can look to where the sign is in my chart that rules it, and also what planets are moving through the sign. And so, for example, with Sagittarius, you have Venus moving through Gemini on the opposite side. So maybe there's something, you know, about values, love, money that is worrying you, and it's playing out in the body for you, Allison, through the hips. And that's just how I like to look at it, because then I can make it real for me. I can understand me better, you know, through the energies that are apparent right there. And as I'm sitting here, like, for example, I'm feeling, you know, in my stomach, some upset. That's Cancer, right? That can be Cancer. It can also be Virgo, depending on, you know, what's going on here, but it's also solar plexus. It can be emotional energy that I'm picking up on. So we all, you know, we're all always able to tap in some way. The body, as I've said before, has so much more wisdom than your mind. Your mind has really access to data, memories, and, you know, critical thinking and that kind of thing. But your body houses the wisdom of the ages and really holds the key to talking to you about what's going on, where you might be out of alignment with something where you're out of sorts, maybe where you've over-identified with a particular energy. So use your body wisely. Use your body wisely. Okay. J-Lo says, great advice. Exactly. Taylor says, Sag rising in the 12th house. So Taylor, the 12th house is the place where the subconscious mind resides. And often the tale there might be where there's unconscious things coming up for you around, you know, maybe when you self-sabotage in a big way, right? No little half doing it. It's like all or nothing. And what is that about for you? You know, why would you totally turn over your life instead of just maybe fixing certain parts? That might be a shadow energy that you can look at. But Sagittarius there also is about uncovering the master or the mistress within. And I think we talked about that even in your reading that we did a few weeks back. And I'm glad to see we're going to meet again next week to do your follow-up on that. Maybe we can look deeper at that for you. Okay, so now no other questions. Did I miss anybody here? Amanda, good morning. Just checking. Valerie, good morning to you. Thank you very much. Okay, I don't see any other new questions. J-Lo, driving is not being nice, so I can listen in. Oh, darn. Taylor says, me too. Good, good, good. All right, so let's transition then. When Ursula, and I don't see Ursula out there this morning, so this is too funny because she's the one that really asked me to do this. When we were talking about Mars moving into Aries, and this was like last week, I was talking about that axis of Libra and Aries. So whatever happens on one side is also affecting the other side. You can't help that. And we were also talking about the challenge of the squares to those. So when you're talking Aries, you're talking a square to Cancer, and you're talking a square to Capricorn, and you're talking in opposition to Libra. So then that reminded me about the axes in our charts and what they mean for us. So I'm going to start, because we've already talked about the first axis, I'll remind you of it in a little bit here, but because today we're specifically talking about Sagittarius energy, and that would bring in Gemini energy, they each rule the third house and the ninth house, Gemini the third, Sagittarius the ninth, which comprises the mental axis in a chart. So the mental axis, meaning the use of the mind, the use of communication, the use of the mind toward learning, and those types of things. So I'm going to hold on for 1 minute here. I'm going to bring up the chart of the day so I can sort of have a way to show you what's happening at the same time. So I apologize to those of you who listen to me as podcast, because you don't really get to see a picture. You're just hearing the audio. But you can always go, for those of you who pick me up on podcast, you can always go to YouTube, Living Astrology, YouTube's channel, and you can see the video, or you can go onto my website, living-astrology.com. So living-astrology.com, hyphen is so important because I post the daily video there. Or you can go to the Living Astrology Facebook page because the video is also uploaded there. So it's basically everywhere out there. It's also on Twitter if you're a tweeter. So you have many ways that you could actually get to the video to be able to see the charts that we look at each morning, or that I try to have us look at besides just the audio. So in a description then, for those of you listening in, the chart is comprised of 12 houses. And when you look at an astrology chart, the houses are the pie-shaped pieces, and they relate to the area of life that is being affected by the transiting energies or by your natal energies, sort of where the action is going to take place, or the stage through which the backdrop of the action in your life. And in a natural horoscope or a natural zodiac, Aries begins the first house, and everything moves around counterclockwise till you get to the 12th house, which is ruled by Pisces. So, and all the other signs in between, you know, ruling their appropriate house. What we tend to see is that axes have similar traits, right? There are similar energies. So the first house, being the house of self, or the I, has its opposite in the seventh house, and that is the house of we. So where here in the first house, I have the relationship of to myself and of my personality and who I am. The seventh house provides the mirror of who I am in my relationships. So this is an axis of relationship. And I think I refer to it as the axis of love and war. Love because Venus rules the seventh house because it's related to Libra, and the first house related to Mars because Mars rules Aries and Aries has rulership over the first house. Mars represents war, the warrior nature. So love and war axis. So I hope that makes sense to those of you who are just listening in. Today, we're going to take a look at all these axes in a little bit more depth, but right now I want to start with the third and the ninth axis because the third is the home of Gemini. And right here in this chart that you're looking at, it is not Gemini. So be imaginative for a moment. Right now, we're just looking at this third house, which is ruled by Gemini in the natural chart, and the ninth house, which is ruled by Sagittarius in the natural house. So the meanings of energy moving through these houses, no matter what sign it is related to what the mental energy is of Gemini and Sagittarius. Now, I'll check back into the chat in a few minutes to see if people are having questions around that, and that might help, you know, make this more clear for you. But this is a mental axis with Gemini ruling the lower mind and Sagittarius ruling the higher mind. These are not value statements, by the way. I'm not saying that Gemini rules the lower mind and that's not as good as Sagittarius ruling the higher mind. It's just two different aspects of who we are in as it relates to the mind. So for example, in Gemini, the third house energy asks questions. Remember, it's curiosity. It's following the strands of information. It's learning to be curious and to follow that curiosity wherever it leads, talking about what you discover, sharing information, etc. But the ninth house ruled by Sagittarius would be about answering your own questions, right? It would be about going on that search for the inner search for your own truth, for your own philosophy, learning life as a process of self-discovery. That would be the Sagittarius end. So Gemini end here, asking questions, following those lines of questioning. Sagittarius is also asking questions, but it is doing it from a more philosophical standpoint, a more internal pressure. Now, the third house Gemini energy rules short distance travel. So all of those things that those trips that we take, maybe on a daily basis via a school bus when we were kids, or your kids getting on a school bus, early education, right? And being around schoolmates and things like that, teachers learning social skills, etc. But the ninth house, Sagittarius, is the bigger picture, right? So this is long distance travel. This might be the travel that we take to other countries, that we explore other parts of the world, or we explore other cultures, and we see how it is that we fit into the larger scheme of the world, how things are run differently in different places. This is also higher education. So where we broaden our horizons by learning things of a higher sort, of a higher nature, with more depth into it, with more critical thinking rather than the informational thinking. The third house also talks about how we learn and how we learn to speak, and our learning style, kind of, right? Gemini, learning how to read, what sparks your curiosity for learning. Like some people love history. Some people love the English language. Some people love drama and art. Other people love mathematics and science. So what is it that sparks your learning? And then how do we learn to write about those things? How do we, what is our learning style, let's call it. So if we're going to have learning disabilities, it might show up here in the third house. Some people are voracious learners. They can see, read, and they know. Other people, I had a son like this who had to touch everything, and boy, does that drive teachers crazy with a kid that needs to be kinetic to learn. When he could get up and move around and touch things, he learned much easier than when he was asked to sit down, read a book, be quiet, do your paper. And, that's different learning styles come through that third house. The ninth house is discovering where your passions are. And from an older perspective, a more mature perspective, what is truly meaningful to you? So Sagittarius takes us into the deeper meaning of things, the meaning of life. Gemini has us exploring sort of the width of the different things that are available for us to connect with, to look at. So I hope that helps along that third and ninth house. Let me see, there was something else I wrote down about this. Nope, I did not. So that is our mental axis, the third and the ninth houses, Gemini and Sagittarius. Now, I want us to look at something else. Let me real quick see if anybody has questions about that before I go on. I'm already in there. Terry, hello. Ursula, there you are. You're out here but walking dogs. Okay, so that's good. You're not missing this. Marjorie, do you also post a daily chart on your site? No, I don't, Marjorie, but that is such a good idea. I just don't have time between, it's my pull between family and work. And, you know, the thing, working with my family means also my clients and doing readings and follow-ups and what have you. I get texted and messengered a lot by clients that listen, and I take my time answering those when I can. So sometimes the idea of writing takes the backseat to being able to talk to people. So I need to stop sharing my screen because now I see that it is out there, being seen in living color. J-Lo says, I love it since my nodes are opposites. I cannot wait to see how this keeps playing out in my life. Marjorie, thank you. Houses were enlightening. Amanda at J-Lo, my nodes are opposite right now too. Meaning, I'm thinking what you guys are saying is that the transiting north node is opposing your south node, your natal south node, and vice versa. I'm not sure if that's what you mean, but anyway, I don't see any other questions. So hopefully everybody was understanding that so far. All right, now I can go back and share my screen once more. And what I want to do now is show you how this axis works out in your own personal chart, because likely, unless you have an Aries rising, your chart is not posted up like I just talked about, where Gemini's on the third house and Sagittarius is on the ninth house. I have a daughter whose chart is that way, but the rest of us in the family are not set up that way. We have varying rising signs. So if this chart were a person, this person's rising sign or entry point into the chart is at Leo. So when we start moving then counterclockwise through the chart, we come through the first house to the second house, and the third house here in this particular chart is at Libra. So we have Libra and Aries across the third and ninth axis. So we have a mental axis with the signs that represent love and war. So do you think that perhaps there's a battle of ideologies going on here? And if you think about this being the chart of the day and the chart of the world at large in the moment, there's this battle of ideologies going on, right? We're under attack by Mars in Aries, Salacia in Aries, Chiron in Aries, Black Moon Lilith in Aries, and Eris in Aries. So if this was a birth chart of a person, this person's mental axis would find them fighting many battles, right? Fighting, different ideas and ideals and philosophies. And yet the third house, the lower mind, seeking to find harmony and balance to all of these varied ideas, ideals, and philosophies. So that's how we would look at it across a chart, a person's chart. The sign on the third house is modifying the mental axis in this case, right? So Libra and Aries modifying the mental axis, and whatever signs then in your own personal chart are there, modify your mental capacity. In my own chart, for example, this here is what's on my third house. I believe it is, oh my God, I can't believe I can't remember this. I believe it is Leo on my second. So it's got to be Virgo and Pisces. And of course, that makes perfect sense to me now as I think about that, because I'm ever practical and real, but I'm bringing in those spiritual concepts of the ninth house, right? The spiritual philosophy and grounding it, Pisces, grounding the Pisces etherics into the Virgo earth energies. So it's pretty easy then to read an axis in your own chart this way. All right, so hopefully that's helpful to everybody. Now, let's take a look, unless you have questions about the third, ninth axis. Before I go, I will do that. Deborah Johnson, Virgo and Libra in the third house, Aries and Pisces in the ninth. So you've got the split going and mixed bag and typical, that's more typical than not. But I would always, the way that I would work this, as you move into the third house, what's the first sign there? Because that's actually the sign that rules that house. So that would mean Virgo rules that house for you. So it's more Virgo expression than it is Libra expression, but Libra would act sort of like the spicing, you know, the flavor icing you put on the brownies kind of thing that modifies it somewhat, but it's Virgo because that's the sign on the cusp. Hopefully that makes sense to everybody. All right. So now let's look then, let's go back to our first seventh axis. I just want to bring up a couple of other things here. One of the other ways that we could look at the first seventh house is the house of I on one side, we on the other. So we could say self versus other, right? So we bring up this relationship axis where Aries is all about self-assertion, right? It's very self-oriented. And Libra is about compromise and cooperation, blending the I with the we. So blending the I into the we. So that is an angular house. So it holds a lot of importance. Angular meaning it is the entry point, the ascendant, the rising sign sits there. So the first house is very important. And then the opposite house sitting there would be the seventh house where the descendant is. And I often think of the ascendant as being the personality, who I am and how I show up in the world, the lens through which I even view the world. I view myself in the world, where on the other side, it's sort of the mirror, right? The mirror, the part I don't see where I don't see myself clearly, where I need to see myself more clearly. So I bring in a parade of people to help me see myself more clearly. That's our seventh house relationship axis. Now, when we go on to the second and the eighth house axis, this I called the money axis, although that sort of is a narrower interpretation of that second and eighth house. The natural rulers of the second house and eighth house are Taurus and Scorpio. So in a natural chart, it would be Taurus on the cusp of the second house, and it would be Scorpio on the cusp of the eighth house. Taurus rules my money. Right? Money I earn, my earned income, my possessions, where Scorpio is about our money, money that comes in from investments or unearned income, right? Might be inheritances, it might be money that you're managing for someone else, it might be your spouse's income, but it's our money, what we hold jointly. So second house, what I have, my possessions, my money, my earned income, and on the eighth house where we hold things jointly. I often call the eighth house opium, other people's money, because it's often money that's coming into you from other people. Also, the second house Taurus ruled would be the house of form, right? Everything in the physical world, the form that your self-worth takes, the form that your life takes, the concrete rather than the abstract. And in Scorpio, we have transformation. So the eighth house takes form and changes it, right? Morphs it, while Taurus takes and creates form, builds it solidly so that it can stand the test of time. So it's related to form and function as well as it is related to money. And so your attitudes about money. So depending, again, if we go back to our chart, let's go back to our chart. Oops, can't do it from that direction. I do this every day. You would think I knew exactly how to do this now. There we go. Second house right here. And in this chart, if this were a person, we see Virgo on the second house, and we see the sign of Pisces over here on the eighth house. So here we may see as a money axis, someone who is probably the best person to put money to use, but that the place where money comes from may be a little bit hard to pin down, that it may be, maybe it's someone who's very good at manifesting and there's no set place of where the money comes from. That could also be more prominent because if this were a person, Neptune is in a sign it rules, and that makes it even harder to pin down where, so the boundaries are blurred between your money and my money. It's all our money, and it all comes into me being the more practical person here, more ability here to be the spender, the wise manager of the money, to be able to apply it practically. So this can then, I would check with a partner's chart in this case to see if this brings up any control issues around money in a relationship. So that just gives us a little bit of a picture of how it might be interpreted from this chart. Okay, again, let's look. I'm going to just leave this up for now because I know you guys can probably still see me in the little window and then I don't have to keep going back and forth. So we did the third and the ninth axis. Let's now look more deeply at the fourth and the 10th axis. So the fourth axis, 10th axis here in the natural chart ruled by Cancer in the fourth house and the sign of Capricorn in the 10th house. It is also an angular house, right? So again, the fourth and the 10th house are very important. What happens there in your chart can supersede everything else that's going on in your chart, especially the 10th house. Any planet that is close to the midheaven has the most power. And what are the two that are closest here? If this were a person, we have Uranus on one side and Eris on the other, roughly about the same distance each from the midheaven. Change and craziness and discord and upset. Doesn't that talk about what the world is kind of right now? Crazy, upset, discord, crazy, upsetting discord. I love this. This is kind of fun to see in an actual reality that this is happening here. But the 10th house, Cancer or Capricorn Cancer axis is really about balancing home life in the fourth house versus your public life in the 10th house. So the fourth house is about home, family. It is often the more nurturing parent. So it used to be, we would say hands down that the fourth house ruled mother. But then society began to change. The dynamics of family changed, right? Where maybe it was the father that was home and was the more nurturing parent. And maybe it was a single family, a single parent home where mom or dad were playing both the role of the nurturer as well as the father figure, mother and father role being played by one person. So now the way we look at the fourth and the 10th house is that the fourth house is about the more nurturing parent. So, and it can be that the father is the more nurturing parent. Maybe the mother is the one that is more authoritative and more the disciplinarian. And maybe she's the one that holds down a job and it's the father that stays home. So the children are more nurtured by the father figure. So it goes beyond the dynamics of just the sex of the person here. This is mothering energy. This is in the 10th house, fathering energy. You could think of this as more nurturing and this is more discipline. So Cancer, more nurturing, more mothering, balancing home life versus the Capricorn end of things, which is more discipline, rules, authoritative, and more masculine maybe in its expression. And it being the ruler of your public life, how you're seen in the world, and therefore kind of related to your career and your profession. This is also another, there's another great way to look at this axis in your chart, the fourth and 10th house, the fourth house of being and the 10th house of doing, right? This about who we be when we're at home, or we let down our hair, so to speak, and we can be our true selves. We can, you know, be as messy as we want to be versus the other house, the 10th house, where it's the doing house and we have to put on our worldly face. right? If I had my druthers, if you saw me on the weekend, I would have no makeup on. I would likely be wearing, well, I am wearing jeans anyway, but I'd likely be wearing jeans and a t-shirt or a sweatshirt. So there's a different persona I have at home versus the persona I present to the world when I do my videos or when I'm actually working with clients. So we all have that going on in our chart somewhere. So hopefully that's understandable. And we'll take a look at this chart here, where on this chart, we have Scorpio on the fourth house, and we have Taurus at the 10th house. And so we have our money axis across our home and public life axis. So we have likely here some very deep roots to creating security and stability at home, and likely some very deep ancestral ideas. Sometimes Scorpio here in the fourth house reminds me of those lineages, right, where businesses are passed on from father to son, or in the times, the pagan times, it was the mother, daughter, passing on of recipes or spells or, rituals. So the fourth house Scorpio is very deeply rooted in home. It's very emotionally connected to home and everything to do with establishing home. And in the 10th house, then Taurus, these might be people who are of the earth. They're farmers, or they're in agriculture, or they're contractors. They're building, they're making forms as a part of what they do in the outer world. And it doesn't have to be just those kinds of jobs either, but this is very steady eddy energy. This is very solid, persevering and enduring in the outer world expression of their doing, what they do in the world. And then home being very deeply personal and maybe even a little secretive. This might be where some people, and I know we all know people like this, where, you know, you see them at work and they're presenting one face and they're very outgoing maybe and very generous of spirit, but they keep their home life very private and very much separate. So you don't really know the person from a home perspective, but what you only know of them is what you see in the outer world. That gives that, I was watching a TV show last night where by all appearances, this family was the model of happiness, right? But underneath it lurked something dark and deep. And in the father, in this case, and as the father murdered his entire family, buried them under the house, and then took off, right? So it's sometimes this is a place in this kind of, you know, Scorpio Taurus, where we see one face and we think it's one thing, and, you know, everything looks good on the surface, but underneath it's something completely different, maybe even dark. So, whoa, we really went deep into that one. That's our fourth, 10th axis. Let's make sure I didn't have, this is the MC and this is the IC. Again, this is the entryway into home and family, roots and foundation, safety and security. And this is the MC. This is the gateway into profession and career, authority, discipline, and your authentic self. Now let's look at the fifth and 11th house axes, which are Leo, Aquarius in the natural chart. Leo and Aquarius, that makes this the self-expression versus group expression axis. In Leo, we have love and romance and dating. And in the Aquarius side of things, we have platonic love, we have friendship, and we have group activities, group creativity. So in Leo energy, we are individuated. We are very self-creative or self-expressive. And in Aquarius, we are very much in a part of the group mind, creating as a group and being very much into creating networks and things like that, relying more on we see ourselves as part of a group, where the Leo individuation sees ourselves more as the head of something, or the king or queen, if you will, of something. And as far as then the energy of creativity, this is the house here, the fifth house, where we think of, you know, the creation of joy, of play, of being relating to our childlike selves. and doing what feels good to us in the moment. At the 11th end, these are our hopes and our dreams and our goals, our bigger picture, the things that are going to make us the bigger picture of happiness that you might have in your life. For example, maybe having the vision of being a contributing something to the world, because it's a world focus, perhaps, or a community focus, where at the fifth house, it is like, what is my individual contribution to all of that? So interesting axis, I think we have here, self-expression versus group expression, the main dynamic. If we look at this particular chart, we see that the fifth house here starts in Sagittarius. So we have something to do with our philosophy. Maybe we're in love with our own ideas of spirituality. Maybe we are expressing ourselves creatively in very large and magnanimous ways. Maybe we have a lot of people, a lot of interests that we love to express. And then over here in the 11th house, where we would have Gemini as the ruler, we would be more inclined to bring new information to people, or to, this axis kind of makes me think of, or this energy on this axis makes me think of a preacher or a spiritual leader who has a lot of great philosophies. They're teaching, you know, theosophy perhaps, or any kind of spiritual beliefs or spiritual leaning. And they're bringing it to a wide number of people where they have wide appeal. So that would mean being able to maybe not be so dogmatic in what you believe, or having a lot of doctrine to follow, but a more freewheeling sort of belief system that fills the needs of the people up here at the Gemini end of things. That's kind of a fun way to look at that. And actually, if we look at this as a world picture of what's going on right now, we see that we are sort of leaving behind this very dogmatic, doctrine-oriented religious belief systems for more openness and a more jovial connection to one another in our spirituality, that the world is shifting in that direction. It hasn't completely, we haven't given up Christianity or Islam or any of those religions yet, but they're shifting, and they're shifting to become more inclusive, and they're shifting to maybe not be so caught up in that dogma and that doctrine, because they're losing the appeal of the masses during this period of time. As the masses become more awakened and more alive and more curious about their spiritual life, and what is God and what is Source and what else is there, and maybe even this could be a bit of an agnostic sort of leaning here, where we don't claim any one belief. In fact, we may not even believe in a God. Our doctrine is completely different. So it's kind of a different axis, a different way to look at that axis. Okay, last we have the 6th and the 12th axis. I'm going to go check really quickly. Can I do that here? Let me do this. I know you guys are going to end up seeing all this fun stuff. I just want to check and see. Terry feeling drained today. Can we pull a card? We will later. We're at 9:00. Holy moly. Amanda, I've been searching, and it's supposed to be an activation to show us the gifts from our ancestors and past lives. You're very okay. Well, I can't read all these comments. There's a lot of them, and I want to finish this before we go on for the day. So I'm going to go back to our chart here. So now you guys should be seeing this chart, the 6th and the 12th axis. This is where we have the physical and the spiritual connection. And interesting, right? Because what we find in the axis is that it's all part of the same thing, right? Physical is spiritual, spiritual is physical. The 6th house in the natural chart, ruled by Virgo, very practical, down to earth, get your, you know, hands in the earth, being, you know, organic in the way that we approach life. And the 12th house being more spiritual. So in the 12th house, it's the more esoteric, the more metaphysical, the things that we can say are not concrete. So it's Piscean energy, right? It's more etheric. In the natural chart, we would say Virgo rules more of the day-to-day life, our routines, the things that we organically do every day, versus the energy of of Pisces, which is about the disorder in our lives. So Virgo, the order, Pisces, the disorder, and also the more infinite expression in Pisces versus the more finite of Virgo. Again, neither one right or wrong. We need both, right? The same as we've seen in all these axes, they're dualities, but they're also part of they're just opposite sides of the same coin. In Virgo, we have the health of the body. And in Pisces, we have the health of the psyche. So that sixth, 12th house axis can talk about that kind of subject where the health of the physical being a reflection of the health of the spiritual, the health of the spiritual sometimes being a reflection of the health of the physical. In Virgo, we have concrete, grounded, and in Pisces, we have abstract, sort of ethereal or etheric, not knowable, not pin downable. In series, in Virgo, we have service orientation, right? To service to self and to community. And in Pisces, we have service as well, but it's service to cosmos or to universal truths or the universe in general. So we have them again, the same or different sides of the same coin, right? There we go. All right, I'm going to stop sharing my screen. Oh, and in this chart, let's look at that real quickly. It's just to complete this. This 12th house begins in Cancer. So our spiritual psyche health here is about being nurturing, kind, compassionate, healing a bit of some of that more public and disciplined approaches, right? This is about loving one another and caring for one another, making sure that part of your spiritual health is making sure that we're feeding the soul, as well as on the other side, Capricorn, doing the nuts and bolts of things, the practical, down to earth, boots on the ground. Let's feed one another. Let's make sure there's some really perverse things that we could think of here as well, where corporations have taken over and their inability to be personalized, where they don't care about the people in terms of them as individuals or their health or what have you. It's all about the shareholders, the corporate, people, and that they do what's good for them instead of what's good for the people, where on this end right now we should be really looking at a more holistic picture of what is good for all. How do we balance that, right? How do we balance the need to have corporations because they pay taxes sometimes, they build things or they create things for us to buy, they support the infrastructure, but it's the people that make up those corporations. And that's the part that's disconnected at the moment. We can see it pretty much here with the preponderance of energies that have been happening, moving through Capricorn, which happens to be on the cusp here. All right, guys, I'm going to go take one last check, see if there are any major questions, problems, complaints. Ursula, this is definitely a sharing to sit down and take notes on. Deep gratitude for sharing us the whole pie. I'm thinking I have an article I'm thinking about writing on this because it's, there's so much to it. So we'll see. Thank you very much, J-Lo. Please take a second and hit the like button. And if you are so guided, please share this video with your friends, your family, the peoples you know. Post it on your Facebook page, post it on your Twitter. Oh, Lord, your Instagram. Do things like that for me. That would be appreciated. Also, if you're so inclined, subscribe. All right. Well, that was a lot today, and I'm hoping everybody can sit with that and maybe understand it more. Maybe you have to re-listen to the video. Let me know your thoughts in the chat. Much love to all of you. Have a wonderful day. I will see you tomorrow morning. Tomorrow's card reading day. And oh gosh, I did not get to read our story. That'll be the first thing we do tomorrow. Read these stories. Note to self. All right. And oh, tomorrow we wanted to look at the chart of the USA too and talk about the eclipse. Lots to talk about. All right, guys, take care. Love to all of you.